Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: ADM, Illinois Beef Association, and Illinois Farm Bureau. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 21st day of December 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Eric Snodgrass will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and we'll talk with Jonathan Kappas about the just signed into law U.S. Farm Bill. We'll do all of that, and I'll tell you a bit more about the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. That's where we are today here in Champaign, our last event on this Friday afternoon, and that you can listen to some of this a bit later in the year, or actually in the new year, more likely than not. You can find it at the Farm Doc Daily website. That's at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Next week, I'm going to take some time off, so our programming will be pre-produced, but the closing market report will be here. And in particular, I want you to pay attention next week to the nutrient loss reduction content, along with some content related to premiums that companies like Anheuser-Busch and PepsiCo and Cargill even, as well as potentially McDonald's, are maybe willing to pay for the conservation practices you're already doing on your farm, and how some of those precision conservation practices might be deployed on your farm in the very near future. It should be a great lineup next week, a great lineup this afternoon, so stay with us on Illinois Public Media. It is willag.org, public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they came in close to the settlement prices at the CME Group in Chicago, right at 15 after the hour of 1 o'clock. So I don't quite have the settlements, but these are the closes. March contract into corn up 3 1/4 at $3.78.5. The May at $3.86, three higher. January beans at $3.88, to rather at $8.83 1/4, down 10 1/4. The March there at $8.96 1/4, down a dime. And next year's November soybeans at $9.35.5, 7 1/4 lower. I'll catch that December contract of corn next year at $3.98 3/4 as well. It was up 2 cents for the day. Wheat futures were off a dime in the lead March at 5.13.5 in the soft red. The hard red March down 7.5 at 5.02. And live cattle futures were up 65 cents in the December. Feeder cattle down 7.5 cents. And lean hogs for the day down $1.25. The closing market report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
This is Brian Kirshner from the State Climatologist Office for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute. Looking back, the storm system that heavily impacted the southern portion of the state late last week generally brought 1 to 3 inches of rain to locations south of I-70, while three stations in Randolph, Lawrence, and Richland counties all picked up over 3.5 inches. With the addition of this rain, regions south of I-70 are running 1 to 2 inches of precipitation above average for December so far. In contrast, locations north of I-70 are running near to an inch below average. December temperatures to date have tended 1 to 4 degrees above normal statewide. This is a trend that looks to continue through next week, as the Climate Prediction Center's 6 to 10 day outlook is showing a signal for warmer than normal temperatures across much of the eastern half of the country. As we look ahead into the rest of the holiday weekend, seasonably cool conditions will be common across Illinois and persist into early next week. Many locations will remain dry during this period, though a few rain or snow showers are possible as several weak weather disturbances pass through the region. The next stronger system looks to impact the state starting Wednesday and will bring mostly rain, however mixed precipitation and snow may be possible further north. According to the National Weather Service, high temperatures for this period are forecasted to be in the mid-30s to 40s and lows in the 20s and 30s. This is Brian Kirshner from the State Climatologist Office.
Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: Illinois Pork Producers, the Nature Conservancy, and USDA. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
Well, let's turn our attention directly to the marketplace now. We're joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. And hey, Merry Christmas to you, too. I won't talk with you again until after the New Year's now.
A blessed and Merry Christmas to you and all the great WILL listeners out there, Todd. Thank you for a great year again.
Tell me about what's happened in Chicago for today on this Friday.
Well, Friday is a representation of the rest of the week. We continue to see very good demand news come through. Corn sales made to unknown destinations, 222,500 tons. Beans, unknown destinations, 115,500 tons. However, the market, like the rest of the week, is not really pricing this in. I think it's one of those times where, to kind of visually put it into perspective, the market is throwing good news into a closet, and one of these days they're going to open that closet door and it's all going to fall out on them again. But it makes sense in my mind why they're doing it, Todd, because there's other issues around this good demand news that probably are more short-term important, more headline news. The biggest two things that have come across in the last 24 hours is the fact that we may have a government shutdown that has brought some strong dollar buying, safe haven buying, I suspect, into the market, has turned crude oil negative again. The other thing that's probably more damaging to my analysis is the fact that the Russian bears came in this morning in the form of the government of Russia and fed the wheat bear, saying that they were going to increase their exports of grains, including wheat. I thought they were running tight and they would not want to have to sell any more at this stage because of domestic prices being maybe too high in the next couple months. But they're saying they've got plenty of wheat.
Is there any reason that they might do it? Because that in particular, because last year was not a good year for them for wheat production.
Yes, and I would say to you that this would make less sense because the Russian ruble has been a real problem all week long. It actually held the wheat back from going higher, I think, than it could have gone. It's making, I believe now, a 5 to 6 week low against the U.S. dollar, and so it's getting close to a 3 month low at this point. I would not, if I were running Russia, want to be selling a lot of wheat at bargain basement prices at this stage of the game if my currency was in taking this kind of a hit. And I would say that especially given that they probably have a lot more reason to sell crude oil more aggressively because they have probably more of a surplus of crude oil than they would the wheat, exactly because of what you were talking about.
So here we are on Friday, and you and I are talking around 20 minutes to the hour of 12. The soybean market is down. This despite, as you suggested, all kinds of good news that had been coming into the marketplace.
Yes, and we've also missed some key rains in areas like Paraná and Mato Grosso do Sul and Santa Catarina provinces of Brazil. These are areas that can make up in corn anywhere from a third to a half of production, and in beans anywhere from 20 to 35% of production, depending on the plantings. However, the trade, I think in Chicago, I felt this a lot more significantly this week in Chicago and the colleagues I spoke with, and that is the African swine fever starting to take hold in the trade's mindset. I think the Chinese purchases are all well and good, but I think the trade is kind of equating the demand that we pick up from China here as being more than offset by a loss of demand in beans and meal because of the African swine fever probably getting worse, not better. And I wasn't feeling that from the colleagues I spoke with in Chicago the past couple, 3 weeks, even though you and I have been talking about it for over a month now.
Anything on the end of the year advice that you've been telling producers or talking to them about, as I suspect they've been calling in a bit worried at this time?
Yeah, and you're right, they have. And I think that second 50% of the soybean money coming, depending on when the government gets the checks cut, if the printers get shut down with this government shutdown, that's a big question mark. But I think number one is move on cash bean sales if you need cash flow because that second check is coming. Get in front of your neighbors. I think there's going to be a lot of cash flow selling after the first of the year. A lot of farmers not wanting to take a lot of money in 2018 and waiting for the calendar to turn. Number two goes back to, can we get a high in the U.S. dollar? If so, I think we're on a good path. China is probably on a good and solid path for growth. Emerging markets on a good path for growth gives us opportunities to sell rallies instead of being defensive like we've been the last 3 to 5 years. This is still a big question mark as we head into the end of 2018.
Are there other macroeconomic functions that you've been watching?
Yeah, a lot. And I think the biggest one probably is associated with China and their weakening economy, and they're having to come in and support their domestic economy. If they do that and we see the dollar continue to go higher, it will probably put new lows in the Chinese currency, and it'll probably go through that important 7.0 level. And that could increase the likelihood of an overall global trade slowdown. A lot of people right now, Todd, are looking at crude oil and China's stock market and saying this could be like 2014 going into 2015. That's what we really have to work against.
And we've talked about this before, but if the Chinese stock market begins to really move lower, how much of an impact on the Dow and the S&P 500?
I think it's safe that we could see another 10 to 15% loss in both the equities and the commodities if we have that, because that's kind of what happened in 2015. The one thing we had going for us here this time around was the dollar was moving lower heading into 2019. Unlike heading into 2015, it was moving sharply higher. That only increases the downside for the riskier assets, if you ask me.
Any final word before I let you go for the day?
Just a blessed and Merry Christmas, and can't wait to talk to you again.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're coming to you from the iHotel today, where the Illinois Farm Economics Summits just wrapped up. This was our fifth one, thanks to all of those folks who came out and joined us all week long in Mount Vernon, Springfield, Peoria, DeKalb, and right here in Champaign. You'll be able to find some of this up online already, and then more complete detail a bit later in the year, next year, at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's from Agrible. Thanks for being with us, Eric. What do you see?
You know, Todd, as we finish up this year, it's been quite interesting to look back to see what our seasons have looked like. You know, if I take you all the way back to April, remember how cold it was, and then we just instantly transitioned to summer. And then at the end of this year, it got so wet with harvest, and then we just kind of forgot about fall and went straight into winter. And even though we've had this nice little warm-up recently, the warm-up was in mid-December, which means our temperatures were just in the upper 30s and lower 40s rather than being, you know, a lot more comfortable. And it's been extremely wet. In fact, some locations down in the southeastern United States are having their wet years on record, and some of those records go back over 125 years. So we got a system spinning off to our east right now. It's kind of running up the east coast. We saw a little bit of light snow on the backside of this, but kind of just was making for some soggy days here across the eastern Corn Belt over the last couple of days. Well, after that system goes through, I'm watching a clipper in the northern plains bringing some lighter snow to like the Dakotas and Minnesota, not too big of a deal. And then Sunday morning around here, there's a weak little front that will be sliding through our area, giving us a chance for some light snow and some rain. Now, the good thing is that by the time we get to Christmas, it looks as though, you know, this potential snowstorm that we were watching over the last week or so, it looks as though right now that it's not going to be nearly as large as we had anticipated. We do have the potential for some light rain or some light snow in and around here, but it looks like the better chances for snow will be in parts of eastern and northern Iowa and southern Wisconsin, and then stretching over to Michigan later. So it looks as though Christmas Day is not going to be that bad of a travel day for a lot of folks here. But the West Coast on Christmas is going to get slammed, and that is a precursor for what we're going to have to deal with by the time we get to the 26th through the 28th. There is a deep trough that is forming out west, and as it moves across the four corner states and then gets into kind of Texas, Oklahoma, it will be quite deep and quite vigorous, and it will be creating a very, very large low pressure system. And I'm talking a big, legit winter storm. The things that you'll have to deal with around this one, well, this particular trough will be lifting toward the Great Lakes rather than digging toward the southeast. And as it lifts, we'll we'll get a lot of warm, moist, humid air up into this area. So there might be the potential for some severe storms to the south of this system, and around us, a lot of rain. I'm anticipating quite a bit of rainfall out of this one. On the backside, there is legitimate concern for blizzard conditions. So I'm talking about parts of Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, then of course the Dakotas, maybe into Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. So this will be a big winter storm system that's coming through. And that one overall signals a bit of a pattern shift for us toward the end of this year. And this is where this pattern shift is quite important, because this brief warm-up we saw mid-month till the end of the month will be changing. Now, what's causing the change? Well, there's a few big players. First, we have this thing called the Madden-Julian Oscillation, and it is this global tropical circulation that just kind of moves around the Earth's kind of tropical regions, telling us where we're going to have a lot of thunderstorms and where we're going to suppress those thunderstorms. Well, when the Madden-Julian Oscillation moves from phase 5, which it's in right now, which is a warm phase for us, as it moves into phases 6, 7, 8, and then eventually back over into phase 1, that's a transition where historically that's correlated with cold weather, and we're anticipating it doing that at the start of the new year. At the same time, the polar vortex, which has kind of shifted itself over toward Eurasia, is expected to have a sudden stratospheric warming event that'll happen north of Alaska, and then that will elongate and weaken the vortex, allowing for cold air to really spill south over the eastern half of this country. At the same time, a big ridge builds just around Greenland, and that's going to force even more cold air in here. So if you are a winter weather lover, then you're going to like the pattern that will be evolving for the beginning of January. Now, let's take this south and talk about what's been going on in South America, because that's really going to be our bigger market story. The big issue there is that we've seen over the last 10 to 15 days things really drying out, especially in parts of Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, and a little bit in Rio Grande do Sul. So those would be the southern growing regions in Brazil. The eastern growing regions have also been dry, but they're normally much drier than the western growing regions. Okay, so what's been the problem? Well, the early season planted beans, I'm talking about those beans that were planted way back in September and early October, where they're now in full maturity and they're getting ready to harvest them. So any rain that comes in now is not going to help those beans. It's like us getting a rain in, you know, like late September. So with that, I would expect to see, because of this dryness, maybe some of the early, the estimates on the early crop yields to be dropping. Now, Mato Grosso has been dry recently. There's been some spotty showers, but it's been much drier than normal. And as the Madden-Julian Oscillation shifts over to phases 6, 7, and 8, that will at least be more conducive for them getting more rainfall. But the question will be, this drier time period that they've sustained, will it have an adverse effect such that it might, you know, really reduce the overall yield estimates? We're not hearing a lot of stories about it just yet. In other words, no major agencies coming out reporting a major yield loss. But the drier pattern they had, well, that was like us getting dry, you know, in September or early September, I should say, more like August. And so there is some concern there. But remember, that crop went in on time and had great early season rains. So we'll have to pay close attention to that one as we progress throughout the month of January into February. And then we start talking about that Safrinha crop, that second crop that will go in, which is mostly a cotton and corn crop. So a lot to be watching here in the near term.
That's Eric Snodgrass. He joins us each and every Friday afternoon here on the Closing Market Report. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from the final Illinois Farm Economics Summit, which is right here in Champaign, recording on Friday morning. So we're not quite sure what has happened in Washington, D.C. If things have not settled out yet, and there is a government shutdown at midnight tonight, then the FSA offices will be closed, and it is highly unlikely, actually won't, just simply will not happen, that the market facilitation payments will be processed. So you can take that for what it's worth and check the news to see where we are at this point. Now, let's turn our attention to some other policy issues. Jonathan Kappas, agricultural policy specialist, is with us. He's been speaking about the Farm Bill. You and I have talked about this a couple of times on the radio already, but why don't you go through the basics of what is different in this Farm Bill from the 14 bill?
Sure, and what we've been talking about all week is the first thing we know is this is largely a status quo farm bill. So there aren't major changes or sort of this sort of overwhelming set of differences we got to sort out, kind of, you know, unlike we had in 2014 when there's quite a bit to sort through. We continue the price loss coverage program and the agriculture risk coverage program, the revenue program. Probably the biggest change overall particularly from 2014, is that in 14, farmers had to make a decision between the two programs, and then that decision could not be changed for 5 years. This farm bill, you'll make a decision for the 2019 crop year, and it'll apply for 2019 and 2020. In the beginning with the 2021 crop year, farmers will be able to change that decision each year if they want. That doesn't mean they have to, but they can reevaluate each year and kind of see where prices and yields are and which program seems to be more beneficial. That's probably the biggest change. There's a yield update, or an option for a yield update for the price loss coverage program. For corn and soybeans, we're looking at roughly 81% of your 2013 to 2017 average farm yields. And again, this is pretty straightforward. If that updated number is higher than what you got on record, then you're going to update and take the higher number because it'll improve the payments. But other than that, largely status quo. Crop insurance, there's some new pieces in there, a little bit to help with cover crop practices. They're specifically defined as part of the good farming practices, so farmers shouldn't have any problem on the insurability of their commercial crop if they adopt cover crops. And some ability to look at enterprise units across county lines. So a few items like that really could benefit farmers overall.
The president, of course, signed the farm bill yesterday. It is now the law of the land. How long will it take for implementation to begin? Do we have any idea at all?
Well, we don't. Implementation, so the upside of this is implementation should not take too long because we're not dealing with major changes. So look, let's presume that cooler heads prevail on the government shutdown issue. We get funded, we get the government up and running so that all the implementation work can get started. It should not take long on ARC or PLC. The conservation programs are going to see, that's where we have probably the biggest change in this farm bill because CSP has moved around a little bit and changed, and we would expect implementation for those changes to take a bit longer. But I'm confident that FSA can probably get this implemented early first quarter or so of the new year if we don't see an extended shutdown or disruption in service.
Unlike last time around when there needed to be a lot of farmer training in order for them to get into this bill, not needed this time. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Well, it is the same choice, really. And given where prices are now compared to last time, and more importantly, where expectations are for prices going forward, you know, for corn especially, this looks like the PLC program is the more likely to provide the better assistance and kind of where we think the markets are going. For soybeans, it's a little bit of a much more of a 50-50 decision as between ARC and PLC. Neither are likely to make payments based on our early kind of estimates of that. Wheat, again, for those that have wheat base, the wheat is clearly a choice for PLC given that 550 reference price is well above where we expect market prices to go. So the decision looks pretty straightforward. The update's a little bit tricky in some of the calculations, but it comes out fairly straightforward for corn and soybeans. And wheat, again, gets 90% of those 13 to 17 yields. So we don't expect a whole lot of challenges for farmers on this decision. And I think really probably the bigger question will be that chance for the beginning with 2021 is, you know, how have the market prices responded? Where are we at as far as this ongoing trade dispute, tariff mess that the administration's put in place and how that's impacted markets and whether that changes that decision a couple years from now. But right now it looks pretty straightforward.
CRP from 24 to 27 million acres?
That's correct. It's a step up, so it won't go immediately to 27 million acres. It'll go up 25, 26 to 27, and that cap will raise the sign-up. The other important thing about CRP is there's now a cap on the rental payments, so it should hold down, frankly, the cash rental payments that the program will pay. So we shouldn't see it competing with cash rent in some of these counties where we've seen some examples of that in the last few years. So it's 85% of the county average will be for the general sign-up.
Hey, thanks so much.
You bet, Taz. Always good to talk to you. Thanks.
That, of course, is Jonathan Kappas. He is an agricultural policy here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
It's National French Fried Shrimp Day. In the U.S., shrimp harvesting was known as early as the 17th century in Louisiana, where bayou inhabitants used nets of up to 2,000 feet in circumference. By the way, it was not until 1917 that motorized boats used trawl nets to catch shrimp. On this day in agricultural history in 1620, Mayflower pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock on the western side of Cape Cod Bay. During the first winter, more than half of the settlers died as a result of poor nutrition and inadequate housing. But the colony survived due in part to Squanto, a native to the New World, who taught the pilgrims how to plant corn and where to fish and trap beaver. In 1773, Robert Brown was born, a Scottish botanist. He improved the natural classification of plants by establishing and defining new families. In 1829, the first stone arch railroad bridge in the U.S. was dedicated in Baltimore. Construction took over 9 months and involved some 1,500 tons of granite. Overall, the bridge stands 62 feet tall and is 300 feet long. In 1944, horse racing was banned in the U.S. until after World War II. And although it doesn't have much to do with agriculture, on this day in 1950, Bing Crosby's White Christmas topped the charts. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Friday afternoon. It happens to be Jim Angel's last day in the office before his retirement. He's state climatologist and he is here at the Illinois Farm Economics Summits to give one last talk. What is your primary message?
Yeah, I think the primary message today is that we're already seeing the impacts, especially of heavy rainfall events in Illinois and an overall wetter condition. So that's the bad news, is we're dealing with more water. The good news is we're seeing fewer droughts or fewer long-term droughts. And so that's something we're having to have to adjust to moving forward. The concern is that for a long time, we've pretty much dodged the bullet in terms of summer heat. The last really hot summer we had was 2012. The expectation is in the future we're going to have much hotter summers in Illinois. So we've got to think about how we can address those issues moving forward, both wetter conditions and the hotter temperatures.
Are these conclusions driven by science and data and publications?
Exactly. This is all driven by the data and the analysis and the research that's gone on. So it's not somebody's opinion or one study. It's a whole host of studies that have supported this evidence.
What do you see, for based on all of this science, for the state of Illinois and how it might change?
Well, I think the big issues for us are going to be water management moving forward. So, you know, having too much water on the field, so we got to get that moved off in the spring so we can get in there and do field work. And then I think we also have to be careful that we don't take off too much water so we at least have some during the growing season. So we might see increases in irrigation at some point, and obviously continued use of cover crops and things like that.
So on water management, is this because you believe our winters will be wetter, because the spring rains will come in larger deluges one at a time? How does that happen?
Yeah, I think the big complication for us is the expectation is we have wetter winters and wetter springs. Summer, not so much. So it's mostly be a winter-spring thing. And, of course, as we've already seen, that's delayed planting in many years. I think this year was a good example of that.
Most are concerned that the earth is warming. What does that look like here in the state of Illinois, if it does?
Yeah, if we look at Illinois, we're a little better off than some other parts of the country so far, but we're expected to see much warmer temperatures moving forward. In the summertime, that means it'll be hotter. In the wintertime, that means we'll have milder winters, and we're already seeing that in many cases.
What does the science tell us about a decade or two decades from now?
Yeah, if we look at about the mid-century mark, we could warm by about 4 or so degrees Fahrenheit, which shouldn't sound like that much, but what it really does is it pushes the extremes out there. So get about 4 degrees warmer. That's what we were in 2012 when we had all that really hot weather.
You know, the argument sometimes is, but our winters are colder. Sometimes we have the coldest months ever. We did that last spring.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, we had one of the coldest Aprils on record, and then we turned right around and had one of the warmest Mays on record. So I think that's the other thing we need to consider, is that not only are we talking about changes and trends, but also the variability. If it gets a lot more variable, that's going to be a really hard to manage moving forward, because if it's always getting warmer, you can make adjustments that way. But if one year is really cold, next year is really hot, that's a big problem.
I take it the volatility then may give us colder colds and warmer warms, but that on average, it's just going to be warmer.
That's right. Yeah, it's just going to push the overall average warmer. But yeah, we're going to see a lot more extremes. And it's unfortunately, it doesn't take those cold winters off the table.
Thanks so much, Jim Angel, on his last day here in the office, that is state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.